Hello and welcome to the first episode of Film Expert versus Film Noob. I'm Chewy.
And I'm Kat.
And we are going to be talking about the film Censor. It's exciting. It's a new film, just came out. I guess as of the day of recording, today is July 4th. I believe this movie came out last Friday. And it is the first film, actually, directed by Prano Bailey Bond. I apologize if I pronounced that incorrectly. She's a female director from Wales. And as this is a film by a female director, I think that's actually kind of interesting, and it may be the first thing we talk about. Oh, also, this is movies impossible to talk about without routinely spoiling things that happen. It's one of those films that really just kind of, as you watch it, they just give you a new piece that kind of makes everything before it makes sense. So you kind of need to talk about the whole thing. So this will be spoiler heavy, so I apologize if you needed to go see this film. But as a recommendation, I guess I would say I would recommend it. What about you? Was that a no?
I think the movie, the thing is that...
Well, before getting into it, would you recommend it?
I would recommend it.
That you would mean... recommend it. Okay, so...
But that doesn't mean...
That's the best we can say that's spoiler-free.
I guess you should watch it.
Should watch it. One thing I guess I'll say just really quick as a fun little informational tidbit, the most recent thing that this director has made is called Nasty. It was in 2015. And interestingly, this short is actually featured in this film as one of the horror movies that the main character watches.
Oh.
So that's kind of an interesting little tidbit. But yeah, so just to start off, we'll just read the, I guess, synopsis real quick, and then I'll let you jump into it. So after viewing a strangely familiar video, Enid, a film censor, sets out to solve the past mystery of her sister's disappearance, embarking on a quest that dissolves the line between fiction and reality. So, what did you think of Censor, Kat?
Well, I first want to point out that if by now you haven't noticed who is the expert and who is the noob, it's pretty obvious. So, what I think about the movie as a whole.
So, okay, just as some context, I guess we'll say, if we're going to explain what expert versus noob really is, I am an expert insofar that I am someone who works professionally in film, and I've watched film, I've studied film, I've been doing this, and it's one of my greatest, I guess, passions in life. So that's what I guess considers me an expert, whereas Kat is one of those people that can barely make it through a film to begin with.
I cannot pay much attention.
So this, hopefully, an art film recommendation by a non-art film watcher might be more valuable. So,
yeah, true.
Anyways, what did you think?
I think that... I don't know. I didn't like the ending. But, like, at the same time, it is a weird ending. It's just, like, the ending made me have more questions than answers.
Right.
And the whole film is nice. I like the colors, right?
Yes.
I like
this. This film is very, very visually resplendent, I believe is the term you might use.
Yeah.
A lot of crazy key lighting. This film actually says that it is a genre horror film. I know you asked that while we were watching that, and I just looked it up. Funny, I actually wouldn't have called it a horror film myself. I would have said it's more of a psychological thriller than anything, but keep the horror lighting element in mind for any of you who know anything about films. So that means lots of crazy reds, a lot of crazy colored key lighting. It's a very surreal film to watch.
Yeah, all the colors I think mean a lot of things that I don't know, but I kept like seeing them being repeated in scenes. What I liked is in one of the scenes when they're watching a horror scene, like the light from the projector goes red, meaning that there's like blood in the scene, but they don't show it. So that was cool, I guess.
Yes. So actually, you just mentioned something very interesting, which you said they don't show it. People, and I actually kind of got a bit of the public opinion or what people are kind of saying, is that a lot of people seem to be talking a lot about the violence in this film, because this film is about someone who watches violent films and censors them.
Yeah.
So just for, I guess, a little bit of a backtrack before we get into the violence thing, this movie takes place in the 80s. It's not actually very, very specific, but Enid, our main character, is a woman who lives, and it's the Margaret Thatcher era of Britain, which essentially just means is that, for anyone who knows anything about Margaret Thatcher, is that her mission was to stamp out the riffraff. She was an extremely conservative person. I mean, this isn't a political podcast, so we won't super get into that. But the point being, Enid is a censor on the behalf of the Margaret Thatcher era of censors. So it's a pretty involved job, but our character seems to watch mainly horror films. extremely violent, like grindhouse B-movie sort of. The film mentions I Spit on Your Grave as an example. So that was 1978, but they refer to it in the past tense. So we can only kind of guess maybe the movie takes place somewhere in the early 80s. We're not super sure. But what happens is, as she's working as a censor, one of the films that she lets pass inspires someone to commit a grisly murder. And that is essentially the inciting incident for a crazy, crazy surrealist journey of a woman who now under, I guess, this extreme scrutiny from the public and with all the violent stuff she watches in her daily job, it starts to get to her a little bit and affects her psychology maybe a lot more than she's letting on. And she kind of devolves into, I guess, a sort of madness, trying to understand what her effect is on the world. She talks a lot about protecting people. And then ultimately, she sees a film by this director named Frederick North. And within it, there's a scene that represents this very, very dark, traumatic thing that she witnessed as a child. And we find out later that her sister disappeared under strange circumstances. And this film essentially has triggered her. And now she devolves into further madness. And it goes from there. So that this movie is about a censor and censoring violent things, going back to what you were just about to say, is the violence in this film. Because I know you're a bit of a squeamish person. You don't like looking at gross, violent things. But in terms of a movie that's about horror and violence and rape and all these horrible things that happen in horror movies, I would say this is a pretty respectful film in terms of the violence. It doesn't glorify it. It really kind of showcases it in a very stark sort of way where it's just like, it's there. But every time they show you the film violence, I don't know if you noticed this, but the letterboxing around the frame, because it's everything's shot on VHS tape back then. So they crop the outside of the frame so that it's the exact frame of a VHS tape. So you visually can tell that it's fake violence. It's movie violence. And when you're looking at the movie violence stuff, that's actually the more violent stuff than the real life violent stuff, I found. Because towards the end, with what happens in her part of her mental break, is that she starts seeing violent things in real life. But that stuff was almost less violent than the movie violence, which I think is also an interesting thing that we'll talk about later.
Okay, so, well, what I think about the violence in the movies being more violent than the scenes in real life, well, that's the whole...
It feels like it's the point, right?
Yeah, the thing is that that's the point, because people trying to say that the violence in the film is too exaggerated. It's too silly to be real. Like, people shouldn't take...
You're talking about towards the end of the film.
No, at the beginning, they always say stuff, especially the other character that was, like, also this one of the guys who sensed her films, and he's like, oh,
who cares? You mean the guy that with her, they both get blamed for the one film?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I do think that the violence in the movies is supposed to be worse, but it kind of contradicts itself at the end. But at the beginning, they do want to point out with the things they say that the violence is too exaggerated and not like real.
Right. You mean the characters themselves dismiss it as not a big deal. Yes. So also another thing to note is that within that intro part you're talking about, you always see this on the news and stuff like that. All the characters, the atmosphere is very oppressive. And I feel like this film, it's not a coincidence that it's come out like post-pandemic, because the movie feels like the sense of dread you feel for being isolated from everyone else. Like the main character isolates themselves from the world and the world isolates them from everyone else.
Thing is that because in the 80s, I didn't see that at all.
let me pass this by you then. So there's a line in the film, and this really resonated with me. I wrote it down because it was very interesting. And the director, the Frederick North character, says something towards the end of the film where he says, "We all live in horror. The horror comes from within," because the character is trying to understand how she's been led on this journey. And he kind of has that phrase to her. And to me, it represented how the entire movie, our main character Enid, is in living in horror or in fear of everyone else. Because firstly, she gets blamed for that film getting let through. She gets doxxed, so everyone knows who she is and starts harassing her. Her bosses are angry at her. Her friends are losing hope in her. And then on top of that, her parents come to her and then saddle her with the fact that they are no longer looking for her missing sister. So a lot of stressful things happen to her all at once. And it feels to me like, and I'm not saying the film is directly comparing itself, but it feels coincidental, strangely, that this film film can have such an isolated character, and what they talk about is the world outside being scary, which is very similar to the way a lot of people feel right now, I think.
I think it's coincidental, because for me it seems that this movie is well taught, and I don't think it was taught in 1 year. I think it has been like on the work for this director or whoever wrote it. I think they have been in this project for a long time. That's how it feels, because for me it feels that it's a really well taught film, right? So I think it's coincidental that it kind of replicates our situation right now.
I wouldn't call it a coincidence as it is so much of a, it's just a likely thing that occurred on set to throw in to be like, well, you know, this is relevant.
Oh, it could be.
This is what I'm saying. I'm not saying it's a majorly planned part of the film. Don't get me wrong. It is an element that is hinted at or something that you can draw on, but the film is not trying to be a horror movies are like coronavirus or whatever. I'm not saying anything like that. It just gave me that feeling because it portrays it in that similar kind of way.
So with the whole film, as I was saying, stress about how movies are worse than reality, and that it's lame to censor them that much because who cares? It's just a movie.
Sure.
But at the end, when the main character meets the director, he also says something about how people think that he creates these scenarios, but he is inspired by reality, and that all his films are inspired by reality. And it makes sense, because that kind of reminds me of how people complain how video games cause violence, but video games are about wars that already happened. So how is that causing violence? Like replicating the violence that already happened in humanity. So that's a really interesting take. He says like, no, these are all like kind of real tales of life. And then I make them films and people get horrified by them, but they're real in a sense.
Well, that's another thing I think, I guess we should explain just for the audience of people who haven't seen this film. Almost the entire second half of this film is surreal, and it's kind of hard to explain. The scenes aren't how we're describing them. They're happening in a more surrealist fashion. Like, for instance, as we're mentioning this director at this point has been the villain of the film, because the character thinks he has maybe some perverted knowledge behind what happened to her sister. She's become convinced that the lead actress in his film looks like her long-lost sister from years before. So when we finally get to see him, he's in darkness. He's a man behind a lens. It's just a light. He's talking in a low, growly tone. He's made to look like a villain. And the surrealist nature of the second half of the film is really just to try to mimic the main character's psychological state, which has at this point become so detached from reality that the film becomes a film within a film to try and explain her emotional state. Because I was going to say, this gets to the thing about the ending that you hated, or not hated, but you were confused by. It has a happy Hollywood ending where literally they drive off in the sunrise. They're smiling and laughing. We know something's wrong, but our main character has saved the day. They drive home. She brings her long lost sister home to her parents. But the movie shows you that this is fake. It's shot in the same movie within a movie style. So we know it's fake, but the movie ends on that. Because we know the main character has complete, at that point, I feel like it's the main character's detached so much that it doesn't really matter what's happened at this point. She's completely lost her mind.
Yeah, the thing is that it seems that she saw a film that reminded her of whatever happened to her and her sister, that they never really specify. They never truly say what happened. They don't say if she killed her sister. They don't say if the sister was kidnapped or killed by another guy. They don't say any of that.
The movie goes back and forth with her taking a lot of guilt, being blamed by her parents. There's all sorts of visual representations of this in the film where she has shouldered a lot of responsibility for what happened.
Yeah, and also like in a part, there's that part that she's watching a film that kind of shows what quote unquote happened to her and her sister. That's why she started this whole like
journey
to find this director, because she thinks he kidnapped her sister or something. In that film, the girl kills the sister and she says, that's not what happened. But they also kind of point that she doesn't remember what happened. So how can she be sure, right? And one of her coworkers says like, oh, but you will be surprised what mind can forget.
I was just about to bring up that line. He says, you wouldn't be surprised what the mind can edit out to preserve the brain.
Exactly. So maybe she goes into this journey just to prove herself that she didn't kill her, or prove herself that she's not responsible for her kidnapping or whatever happened, because they never specify. So it's up to your imagination to think, like, to imagine what truly happened.
Ultimately, the point is she kind of succumbs to the mania of all these stressors in her life, which is why they make, like, I made a point of saying the edit thing, but they make jokes like that in the film about trying to relate her job to the way the film is visually represented, to then the way how her story unravels. It's a multi-layered film within a film about film. So this is very much a filmmaker's movie.
Yes, this is a movie for filmmakers, so they can, like, I don't know.
But it's not pretentious. I don't want to make it sound like me saying a film within a film about it. Like, it sounds so dumb.
No, it's not dumb.
They just play it. Everything is so straightforward. They tell you from so early on that everything you see is really just supposed to represent the character's psychology, that you kind of just go along with everything that happens.
So this is a mixture of two films.
Okay.
One is Silence of the Lambs.
Okay.
And the other one, I think it's called Sisters. It's okay. About, I don't want to talk about it because I wanted to watch it.
Okay.
But it also happens there that whatever the plot is, that one of the sisters forgets what happens, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So if you guys know what I'm talking about. And the Silence of the Lambs, of how they show the psychology of the woman.
I was actually going to bring that up.
Mm-hmm.
This movie, if I didn't say this already earlier, but was directed by a woman. And I feel like that's actually very important to a lot of the way the violence is portrayed in this movie. And then on top of that, the way that women are portrayed in this movie. Because the movie does this thing where they talk about what was in their heart. There's a point in the film in which they watch one of the movies they're rating, and one of the character offhandedly says something like, oh, you know, why would they do that? And of course, Enid, talking about the film, is like, oh, it's a male power fantasy. It's a revenge thing. You know, they got to get revenge for the women that hurt them. And another point in the film, a character says, you were always in my heart. And it's referring to a violent character who plays, I think he's one of, like, a wolf man, essentially. And he says, you were always in my heart. And you being our main character, Enid. So they make a couple references to women being in the heart of people who do violent things. And I think that's kind of interesting because at least in this film and the era it takes place in, exploitation films were almost all exclusively about violence towards women. Like, you know, the rapes and the murders, and there's always a monster, you know, whatever, all that kind of stuff. I feel like all those things kind of come together to talk about a lot of the ways women were viewed then and now. But there's a lot of sexism in this movie. Like a ton. So much sexism. From the scene with the sleazy producer, who makes a lot of passes at her and talks about how pretty she is, and oh my god, I can't believe we've been hiding this person away. There's a scene later that Enid goes to his house to find out more about Frederick North, in which he tries to date rape her, more or less is the term. He tries to date rape her. It doesn't go well, but there's rampant sexism everywhere in this film. From the way they portray Margaret Thatcher on TV, to the way that everyone talks about our main character once she gets doxxed, people start calling her and they say extremely, extremely mean sexist things. So there's a propagation of sexism in the film. It's the 80s. Of course there's sexism. But I just think it's kind of interesting to note that, much like Silence of the Lambs, it's portrayed in such a subtle way in which they still pretend like it's okay in this movie, which I kind of like. Really giving us a view of how it felt back then. And then on top of that, going back to this being directed by a woman and the way the violence is portrayed, I feel like this is an interesting thing because for violence, with all the films we see, they're all male directors.
Yeah.
All of them. And it's always gore and destruction and focusing on all the violent things. Whereas this movie focuses on how those violent things make you feel. Because in this movie, whenever there's real world violence, they always cut away. They show what the character feels when the violence is happening. They show their face while they're, you know, let's say axing someone or whatever. And throughout the entire film, all we focus on is the main character and how they feel about the violent things that happen in their past and around them and the things they see. So I think that's a very, very interesting thing, and I found that extremely refreshing and very, very commendable that the film can pull that off. So as a first-time director, congratulations to Prano Bailey Bond. I really look forward to seeing whatever they do next.
Okay, I want to correct myself. The movie I was comparing it to is The Uninvited.
Oh.
Yeah, it's not The Sister. I think in Latin America, they like to change movie names, and maybe they changed it there. I don't know.
Very different film.
Very different film. So, I compared it to The Silence of the Lambs and The Uninvited. And about the sexism in the movie, yeah, when you talk about it like that, it makes sense. I didn't notice it because I wasn't looking that deep in the movie. And the thing is that I was trying. For me, it was more like, oh, it's an old movie. Of course, there's sexism. I didn't even see it. It was like, it was just part of it for me.
Yes. But again, like I said, it's subtly played. So to you, you just assumed it was a part. You're like, okay, that's movie sexism. It's part of the norm.
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
But there's also that scene in which in the film store, the girl who brings back the illegal film is a girl.
It's a woman. Yes, getting the perverted violent films that the Thatcher era is trying to destroy.
Which is weird because then when she tries to get a illegal gore film, he's like, you don't look like someone that will enjoy it.
Yes.
But that's the thing. It's like, why would the other woman enjoy it? Like, what's the difference?
Yeah.
It's so weird.
Yes, there is multi-layered levels there.
Yeah. No, like, because you said so, I noticed that. Other than that, no.
Totally.
And there are some... The film looks... for me, was predictable. Mm-hmm. I, since the beginning, knew she had something to do with the death of her sister. Maybe because I watched The Uninvited.
Okay.
And it kind of like, I just knew... I didn't knew how the end will be. I had ideas and it didn't really go that way. As I said, like the ending is kind of open to interpretation, I think. But I did knew she was gonna go crazy by how she's already crazy. It seems like she's unstable because, well, her sister got lost or murdered.
Something horrible happened to her sister and it has ruined her relationship with her father and her mother.
Yeah, but it was happened when they were so young. So
that
it has been years and years of trauma. Of course, she's not well and she's watching horror movies, gore movies every freaking day. That's not good for your psyche. Yes.
So I think that's an interesting point to bring up because say whatever you want about violence in games or movies or music or TV or anything like that. But I feel like that is one of the more profound statements in this film is that they say, yes, movie violence can make people violent, but they show you almost what the perfect cocktail of circumstances would have to be. A mentally unstable person with trauma in their life. So they're saying, much like everything in your life, there are catalysts. Please, you sound like you have something really important to say.
I have something to say because that makes so much sense. It's the perfect cocktail to do something violent. And they do mention, because in one thing that happened in the movie is that there's a guy who killed his wife and ate her face.
Oh, yeah. That's the aforementioned horrible thing that is inspired from a movie that she passed earlier in the film.
But, and then everyone was judging her because she passed the movie and the guy then committed that crime.
Yes.
And then for a split second, we find out
in the background.
Yeah. In a split second, we find out later in the movie that he never watched the gore movie.
Yes.
Characters
in the background are reading a newspaper being like, what? He didn't even watch the film. This report said he didn't even know about it.
Yeah. So he committed the same crime of eating someone's face without watching the movie, which means that people will still do crazy stuff without watching crazy films.
Yes.
And it also shows that you can watch crazy films without committing crimes. And it shows that you can watch crazy films and commit crimes.
Yes. They are not mutually exclusive.
They're not. So that makes a lot of, this movie's way layered. it's so much more than what I originally thought, right? Because like, you mention all that and I'm like, all right. And then they mention that it makes so much sense that it's the perfect scenario of someone that was actually
to have a mental breakdown.
Yeah, she had a mental breakdown, and that reminds me of like the documentary Don't Fuck with Cats and Luca Magnotta and he took inspirations from films to commit murders.
Right, that is true.
But that doesn't mean the rest of us did it.
Right.
Yeah, like Chewie watched the same movie. He's not doing
As far as I know, I have not eaten anyone else's face.
Yeah, like, it's like, it depends on the person. It doesn't depend on the movie.
Yes. I just think it's a very interesting little extra icing on the cake that the movie condemns and then at the same time, I guess, showcases how movies can make you perverted and violent. Much like anything. If you just put yourself in this horribly isolating scenario and you want to seek out violent things, because ultimately our character does do that. And she gets like, it's almost perverted when you watch her. When she's in the movie store, she's like all sweaty, her hair's all matted and messy, and she just looks like her eyes are bloodshot everywhere. Like, she just looks like an emotional wreck. And there she is being like, where can I find this guy? I need to see this film. And the video store man tests her clout, and she starts rattling off all these films she's seen and starts talking about the violent things she's seen in films, and they're horrifying. But she's just like, you get the sense that she is a person who craves violence and she's fascinated by it. But obviously in the movie, that's what she struggles with. She is always trying to suppress it, and she's always trying to push it deep down.
Yeah, they do mention that people need outlet to get their violence out.
Yes.
I don't really know. I don't really know about that.
Right.
Because I guess I don't like violence unless it's like silly violence.
Right.
And I don't know. I don't like, I won't go and play video games that have like zombies and you kill them, or like war games, but a lot of people do. But one thing that I do is watch true crime a lot.
Yes.
A lot. It's every day, all day. People might think that makes me more paranoid, or it might give me ideas about like stuff. It doesn't. It's kind of more like I already have those fears about being murdered or kidnapped or raped. And watching those videos kind of validate those fears and also make me feel like, oh, I am safe. I'm not the one in the true crime documentary. I'm alive. Right. I'm here. I'm safe. I would have got out of that situation because I'm smarter.
Sure.
So like those type of videos, it's an outlet for me to feel safe. So maybe when people watch those violent videos, it's, I don't know.
Yes, I believe there probably is something to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure people who play sports, they need physical violent contact. That's how they need to get the energy out. And they're like, okay, well, I want to do it by tackling a guy in football. So yes, there is definitely some truth to finding a way to like let out the more negative energies in your life, whether that be therapy, painting, writing music, all those things.
Or watching horror movies.
We're watching horror movies.
Yeah, I had a friend that she was obsessed with Saw movies.
Yes.
She watched them all. She loved them all. All of them. She was obsessed with them, and she will watch them and laugh at them. And I never understood why, but she says it's just funny because it's not real. And it's just funny scenarios of stupid people in like those movies.
They're absolutely absurd, which is an interesting segue into, I guess, the ending of the film, because I feel like you bringing up Saw and all the crazy movie violence, I would say general audiences are pretty aware of the lengths movie violence can get to. Like, as much as like your grandma might be like, I'll never watch Saw, it's horrible, the blood, like, sure, maybe your grandma can't picture it, but the average audience person goes, those super violent movies with this and this and this, I have a pretty good idea of where it's gonna go, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this movie, to completely flip it on its head, has some of the most intentionally goofy gore effects in the ending of this film for what I can only assume to be a way to just put the cherry on top of the sundae of movie violence is not the same as real violence.
But that's...
Because, well, before you go off, the character in the watching all of the movies within the movie, all that violence is movie violence as we know it. It can get pretty intense, so, you know, we understand that that's the level. And then as soon as it's the quote-unquote real world in the movie, then it is more likened to movie violence than the actual movie violence in the movie, because it's kind of more intense and just kind of shocking, and there's the blood shoots everywhere. And but then when you see it the way they shoot it, they kind of just show you a little bit behind the curtain, like the guy's head pops off, you can kind of see like a dummy stump, like little silly things like that, where she essentially, the main character essentially in the finale, this is gonna be a mouthful, she ends up in the original forest that her sister and her went missing, because that's where Frederick North is filming his next film, which may or may not have the actress that she thinks is her sister at the location. And she arrives there, gets put into hair and makeup and into wardrobe, and then becomes a part of the film. There is a metaphor in there. I'm not going to get into that just yet. But the point is, she ends up in the film, and then she attacks the movie monster with an axe. Turns out she's not playing along. She actually killed him with an axe, and then chases her sister through the woods screaming at her, you're my long lost sister. What are you doing? I'm here to save you. Obviously, when you say it like that, it sounds insane. The movie movie portrays it as the fun Hollywood ending. Like, oh my God, she killed the beast and his head pops off and she cleaves a hole in his chest and there's like a mouth in it that's talking to her and the heart's like, it was in the heart. The thing he says to her about women and violence and stuff. And it just, it's insane. And then as soon as she leaves the, or tries to chase after her sister, the director steps in the way. He's like, what are you doing? What the hell? Oh my God, you killed that guy. What the fuck? She swings the axe and his head literally just pops off like a doll and just kind of rolls away. And you're like, okay, well, this is obviously stupid. You know, this is supposed to look stupid. And then as soon as she leaves the set and goes outside, then it's reality again. And it just is horrifying. She's chasing her sister with an axe, like, no, please. And her sister's like screaming in panic. No. The quote unquote sister is not really her sister, but.
Yeah, but that's the thing is like, that was supposed to be real life. That was supposed to be that she actually killed the director in real life.
Yes.
And it was silly how it happened.
Exactly.
So I don't know. It's another layer. I just don't understand. It's like, I know how all these things are like just little details that
ultimately mean nothing to you.
They mean a lot, but I just think that I can totally see how this is her first film, because I was gonna tell you that for me, this reminds me of a graduate college kid who made his first movie, but had a little bit more budget than the average graduate, you know?
Okay.
That's how I saw the film. Like, really? Because it does have, like, you can see there's a budget, that you can see that there's a lot of like.
And the film, and just to clarify, you don't mean the film looks amateurish.
No,
the film looks incredible.
Yeah, the film looks incredible. How they shot the scenes is incredible.
The acting's incredible. The lead actress, I had to look up how to pronounce her name because she's Irish, so you know how that goes. Her name is Niamh Alger, and she is so good.
Yes, she is.
She is incredible in this film. It's essentially a one character movie, and she just steals every scene.
No, but that's the thing is like, I see all that. I see how much work and thought and big brain ideas went into this film, but then there's something missing. I think what it's missing is like professionalism. No, it's not professionalism, but more like experience.
You're saying you would have preferred if this film had some way to tie it all together in a neat little bow.
It's not open enough to be an open-ended film.
Right.
And it's not tight enough to be, oh, okay, now we know what happened. That's what I didn't
like. Okay, so you're saying this film is so perfectly in between those two that you didn't like that.
I didn't like that. Yeah, it's not my preference. I either like it when it's so open, you go days trying to figure out with your brain, you just go crazy. Like, that reminds me of the film Doubt. It's such an open ending that you can put whatever you want or try to think about scenarios and you'll think about it for days.
Yes.
Or there's films that have an end that it's just an ending. It ends. It resolves.
Yes.
And this one is not, it's either of those. Kind of resolves, but at the same time, it's kind of like open. So it's kind of, I didn't quite like that.
Right.
So I think how I saw it is that this was a good idea, but it's a better idea in your head than when it's implemented.
Right.
But that's my opinion. It could be that you, that you know about film, think that this is a masterpiece. I see it as like just people have ideas and sometimes they're not as good as they are in your head. So for me, this is like a first film for sure, because she made this idea that maybe was so good in her head, but in her next movie, she might say, huh, this didn't went exactly how I wanted
it
to go.
Yes, the perspective of her first film will make her a better filmmaker for sure.
Yes.
I guess I would say to that point, I don't think this film's a masterpiece. Like, I don't. I think there are a few masterpieces in this world, but they can exist. I will say, though, I completely agree with you on the first filmmaker assessment, because there are definitely some problems with this movie, but they're like, they're so minor, but it's little things like this film has no plot. The plot really gives up 20 minutes in. And if you are someone who likes plot, like I'm going to do a shout out to my mother, who, if there's no plot, she completely cannot be with a film. For instance, a good example is Mad Max Fury Road. I remember watching that with her and she was just like, there's no plot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I can't, like, this is intense and everything, but I have nothing to ground me to what's going on. They need to get from point A to point B, and then everything in between is them just trying to do it, and that's not enough.
That's not a plot.
She needs to be like, oh, they go to point A, and then they need to get this clue, and like, she really likes that, the older style of filmmaking in terms of very structured plot and whatever. So that is a criticism I can give this film, obviously, I don't think the film's really trying to go for that. But for anyone who looks for that in a film, you're not going to get it here. And it's going to frustrate you because there are definitely some times, and I feel with you saying an experimental film, you kind of need them to go all the way or not at all. I'm kind of the same way. I don't really like a half-assing of one or the other. If you're gonna go super crazy, weird, experimental, I want you to go so far out of left field, but at the same time, I need visual representation of what things mean. And this film is good at visually representing what everything means, but it doesn't really go anywhere beyond that. It goes, oh, well, that refers to her sister, or this refers to her job, this refers to her psychological state. There's always little things everywhere, but that's kind of it. The movie exists in and of itself in a bubble and doesn't go beyond the movie. Mm-hmm. They make some references to the, like I mentioned, the Margaret Thatcher era of Britain. Ultimately, they don't really have a whole lot to say about that. That's just completely incidental to the framework of the film. And when you get to the second half of this film, because this film is an hour and 20 minutes, it's quite short. There is really no plot to speak of. It's just she ends up in another place and she's just drawn by the presentation of the film just draws her around. Like she can be looking to the right and she hears a crying from the right and she walks over there and then it cuts and she's in her apartment and there's a lot of discombobulation and disorientation in the second half of the film that really, I think, like what you're saying, makes it a little bit harder to see what any of the point is. This film nails representing the character's psychology, but the film doesn't have much to say beyond itself.
Yeah, what I think is that, because this has happened to me, like me as a designer, it has happened to me that I have a clear idea in my head, and then when I execute it, it doesn't work because of, like, because imagination is better than real life. So what I think is that, yeah, there are a lot of scenes in which they just jump from one thing to another, like, this scene could mean that she's dreaming, and then there's real life.
They do not give you any clear answers for any of this.
Yeah.
Once it starts, you're just strapped in, and the movie doesn't go, oh, well, that was obviously reality, or that was obviously fiction, or they do some things to try to point you in the right direction, but they don't really care if you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is like I feel that this was just an amateur mistake. Okay. Doesn't mean she's a bad director, she's great. It's just I can clearly tell it's a first time movie. It's like I could clearly, like as I said, my perspective of these was like these are just like some really smart college graduates and this is their first film. That's how I felt, because the idea of it, it's better than the execution. Doesn't mean the execution is bad. It's just that they're way...
It's like a B+ instead of an A.
Yes. It's like, of course, if you have a bigger budget and maybe years of experience as a producer or director or whatever, you will know how to get these ideas to the next level. This is definitely the first level. This is like how we can like put this idea on camera that explains it. And it's like, that's it. It's not a movie that goes beyond that makes you go crazy and like, oh my god, these things are so insane, and like the feelings that are making me feel. This movie didn't make me feel anything. It's like, oh, I understand the idea, but I'm not like captivated about it. I'm more like it's a lot of superficial for me.
I will completely agree with you on that point. I ultimately by the end felt more impressed than affected.
Exactly.
I was very impressed by the movie and I loved everything they did, but it was like a secondhand distraction because you watch a scene and you go, wow, this looks really good. That's all you can really think about.
I think
this looks really good.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's kind of like she definitely did all the things by the book.
She did everything right.
Yeah, she did everything right.
But the assembly maybe wasn't as perfect as it should have been.
It's more like you have to break rules sometimes, or you have to create your own rules, or you have to just out of experience know what works and what doesn't. So it kind of seems that she knows the exact kind of theory or kind of equation to do a good film, because she might have been a good student, or she's just that talented. And she did it, she executed. But that's the thing, is like there's something missing that only crazy directors can pull off. Those crazy directors, the director in the movie is one of them. He's crazy, he's trying to get something out of the person.
Yes, they call him a provocateur and an artist.
Yeah, so like he in real life would be one of those crazy directors that does crazy things and people are just like amazed by all his stuff.
He definitely seems like the way he is, I guess, portrayed is he definitely seems like the 70s era filmmaker, but now he's kind of gotten a bit old. Like think of Francis Ford Coppola and in terms of how insane the lengths he would go to get films made. And he was definitely the kind of guy who was like, we're going to make theaters change and we're changing the landscape. The character definitely seems like he's reminiscent of someone like that, that made a lot of great films in the 70s. And then into the 80s, his career changed and maybe he's fallen out of favor because his movies have too much violence or sex in them. And maybe, you know, back in the 70s, it was cool because that's what the era film was like. But everyone's kind of forgotten about him and they think he's old hat. The film world has changed. We don't want that sick, violent shit anymore, you know? So I think you're right. He definitely is supposed to embody that era of filmmaking, but that era of filmmaking has never really returned because it was like the Wild West.
Yeah, and I can totally see this director being an amazing director later on in her career.
Right. Her career will get better for sure.
Yeah, 100% will get better because every director just learns from their movies. I have seen movies that you will tell me like, oh, this is one of their first movies. And I'm like, yeah, I can clearly tell. And I can clearly tell like the budget is lower. I can clearly tell he then improved. It doesn't mean that their body just like.
But yeah, so I guess because it feels like we're kind of wrapping up to the end of this now. I don't think we have much more to say about this film because ultimately I don't think I would ever rewatch this film.
There's no plot.
I think I would. Going back to our recommendations, I would recommend people to watch it because obviously the people that I know are kind of more film buffs, so they would appreciate them. But the general audience, I don't think there's a lot for them to get into. I looked this up really quickly too, right before we started recording. This has I think as of recording, a 58 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is that bad?
That's bad. Mm. Below 60% means you're rotten. So what that just means is that it only has an approval rating of 58%. It is almost evenly split between people enjoying the film and not liking the film.
That's the thing. I enjoyed the effort. It's like, I'll give them a participation trophy. Like, I'll definitely be like, you just put so much effort in this film. It's just there's people that put sometimes less effort, but they have.
They know how to captivate you a little bit better.
That comes from experience. That's all. It comes from experience. It comes from doing it one time, learning from what worked, from what didn't work, and then do it again, and so on. So definitely, like, if you're just a movie watcher, you don't care about anything, you just want to enjoy a movie, you might not enjoy this movie. I enjoyed the art, I enjoyed the ideas, I enjoyed the layers, but the movie as a whole, I definitely like, no.
It's definitely more an example of like the textbook greatest hits of film techniques.
Yes.
So when you watch it, you get to see them all done very well and executed very, very, very competently, but it is stuff you have seen before.
Yeah, this could be a good film they show in university just to be like, look at all these details and lights and how they express these ideas in different.
Sure, it will definitely. Yeah. It will be studied for its technique, but not remembered for its content.
No, it's definitely not. And it's not that type of movie at all.
I agree. Well then, I guess that about wraps it up. Do you have any final thoughts you want to say?
No.
No?
No.
No, that's it? Okay. Let's go eat dinner.